Hey, this is Craig Dillstrom Media.
This is DJ Kaya.
This is Elliot D'Souza.
Hey, this is Jason D'Souza from Aldona.
Hey, this is Nash Lobo from Aldona.
This is Pascal D'Souza from Kelly.
Hey, this is Rohit D. Almeida.
Hey, this is Roland Mascarenhas.
Hey, guys, this is Ron Montero from Localin.
Hi, this is Roy Fernandez from Donna Paula.
This is Ryan D'Souza from Cola.
Hey, this is Steffi DeCruz.
Hey, this is Tony Nazareth, and you are listening to...
And you're listening to the GSL Podcast.
And you're listening to the GSL Podcast.
That's right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the GSL Podcast. My name is Wendell, and I'm glad you're tuning in for another episode. We have a lot of games to recap. It's been a couple weeks since our last episode, and just one quick production note. Our next episode after this will only be after the regular season ends. So the final regular season games will be on September 9th. So we will have a podcast that week. Kind of looking forward to the playoffs, seeing what the matchups are, making some predictions. So definitely look forward to that podcast. It's going to be a good one. But for now, we're going to just recap all the games that have happened since our last podcast on August 2nd. And with that, I'll bring in my lovely co-host, Keegan. How's it going?
Hey, Wendell. I'm good.
So quite a few games to get into. There's no real news this week, so we can jump to the match recaps. Starting off with August 8th, we had a midweek game between your team, Lotlum, and my team, Aldona, with a final score of Lotlum 4, Aldona 1. Goal scorers for Lotlum were Craig Raj with 1, Neville Maciel with 1, Aaron Atwal with 2, and for Aldona, Richard Fernandez. So the first thing that jumped out to me right away, it's kind of like when I saw Kyle Machado score, and I'm seeing Neville Maciel. Neville, I remember he had a bad injury at some point. He's coming back from that. He's always been kind of in and out of your team. Talk to us about Neville. How did he get a goal here, and what kind of feature is he playing on your team this season?
Yeah, I think this was the first goal he might have ever scored. I'm not sure. But
it might be. He's a very unfamiliar name on the goal scoring sheet.
Yeah, also because mostly he plays defense, so he doesn't venture up too much. But we actually put him on the wing in that game, and he actually scored with his left foot. It was pretty impressive. He dinked it over the keeper from relatively close range. It was a nice goal.
Yeah, so I remember from our point of view, I wasn't able to attend this game, but I remember I got a pretty solid recap from my team. And from our side, we were kind of disappointed with the result. We hadn't played in a while, so coming back from a long time off, you're rested, but you're also rusty. But we looked at playing you guys, top of the league, as a real challenge to see where our team stands, and kind of a good a litmus test for us. Unfortunately, our goalkeeper, Kirit Mascarenhas as well, who was supposed to come in for Ryden as our full-time keeper, got injured 10 minutes in. He suffers from a chronic knee injury, unfortunately, so he was taken out. But kind of just over the course of the game, you guys were just much more talented, much better play style, just having much more possession. And once again, I've always said about your team, the pressure just ramps up and up and up, and eventually you're going to give at some point. So kind of the floodgates open, you guys scored 4 goals. So very disappointing result for us. We really thought we played badly, but also that you guys deserved the win. How did you guys feel from your point of view?
Yeah, that was actually one of the better games we've played all season. The field we played in was amazing. It was almost like turf, although it was natural grass. The weather was really nice. We were all relatively fresh. It wasn't, a hot day, because it was a night game. And we played really well. Our passing was slick. Quick passes, moving down the wing, and we played really well that game, and I think the score reflects the way we played.
Exactly, and unfortunately, one thing I want to bring up now is another injury update. I did hear from my GSL insiders that Neil Da Silva, former MVP, was spotted on the sideline watching the game, but his arm was in a cast or there was a broken bone. Can you give us some insight into what's going on with Neil right now?
Yeah, he injured his arm in another league that he plays. He should be out a couple of weeks, but Neil, he's a tough guy. He takes care of himself. He should be back soon.
Okay, that's always good to hear. That's not a long-term injury for him. So great result from you guys. Usually it's a tougher game against us. I know you guys always look forward to the game as a test of physicality, but unfortunately we weren't able to put up a stronger showing. Moving on to the August 12th games, we have Colva versus Aguada. Once again, I don't know if I keep getting sucked in by this, but I always keep waiting for Kolva to have that big result against a big team. You know, this was another opportunity for them yet again, facing Aguada, but final score was Aguada 6, Kolva 2. So very, very shocking result. Goal scorers for Kolva was Jeremy Pinto with 1 and Wayne Branches with 2, or sorry, with 1. And the goal scorers for Aguada were Kryftos Hermanios with 1, Steven Fernandez with 2, and Lester Fernandez returning, you know, midway this season with the hat trick. So I'll jump right into talking about Lester. He's someone that I've talked about a lot. I think it was last season, a complimentary striker to Steven. He was away for a lot of the beginning of this season, but he's made a return. And the fact that he's scoring goals again is great for them. He just gives them another offensive threat, another option to complement Steven. And it's kind of one of those things where pick your poison, who you're going to mark. All three of the goal scorers for Guada really show just how talented they are. What do you think about Leicester, and what would be your strategy for kind of defending against Guada?
The key thing for us when we play Guada is just, like, you got to pressure whoever has the ball. Because if you give, you know, Cruyff, Casey, the guys that play in the middle, like, time, they're really good at picking passes and sending, you know, Leicester or Steven through on goal. So it's important to press the ball so that way they don't have the time to, you know, get their head up and send some balls over the top or through the channels. Because once these guys get chances, they both, like, both Leicester and Steven can finish with both feet, and they're good. Like, once they get into the box, so you got to try to prevent the ball from getting to them in those spaces.
Yeah, I agree with you. You really can't give them time, especially Cruyff. He's someone that really thrives on time, because the thing is, he's not going to turn the ball over, but if you pressure him, he'll make a pass, but it'll be like a simple pass, a square ball or pass back. It's not going to, you know, be a through ball. It's not going to develop their offense. Whereas if you give him any amount of time on the ball, he gets his head up, he looks, he turns, and then he'll make a through ball, he'll make a pass, he'll make a chip. He'll always be much more effective. So I've had to defend him in the past too, and my method has always been just try and pressure him, but don't lunge. If you lunge, he'll make a move, he'll try and get around you. But if you just run up and you pressure him, you jock him, he's just going to make a simple pass. There's not really much else he can do. And that applies for a lot of talented, offensive-minded players, is if you just really pressure them on the ball but don't lunge, there's not much that a player can really do except make a square ball or pass back. I'm sure you've had the same experience when you've been pressured on the ball.
Absolutely. Like, that's the one thing any attacking player wants is time on the ball, right? The minute you say there's constant pressure, it just forces you to make quicker decisions, and then you're more likely to make a mistake, or you're forced to give up the ball a little quicker than you would have liked to.
Exactly, because when you're receiving the ball, you're obviously looking around you. And if you see a guy rushing towards you, you love it because, you know, you can just make one touch and just destroy him and get by him. Or if you turn around and you see no one around you, you love it because you get ball, get possession, look up, take your time, make a pass, take a shot, do whatever you want, make a run. It's actually the greatest thing as an offensive player. So for all the defenders listening there, you really have to pressure the ball but not lunge. It's really tough to do because you always want to win the tackle. You always want to win the ball back. You get nervous. You want to make that lunge. Or it's the opposite. You don't want to get beat, so you back off too much. So it's a really fine balance that the best defenders find, a good medium between the two of pressure but not lunging. And it is difficult to do for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree that, you know, the really good defenders on the league, like, they know exactly when to jump in and when to press without lunging in, and that's a big difference.
Yeah, I think Bradley on Margot would be a great example, whereas he'll pressure the ball always. He'll never just give you a free run. But whenever he's making that diving tackle or that sliding tackle, he's always winning the ball. It's never off-timed. It's never too early or too late. It's always well-timed. So I think that's a really good example of someone who doesn't always just, you know, play off the ball and will attack the ball, will try and win it, will try and challenge, but in a smart way and with the right timing, and also depending on which player he's facing against. Moving on, we have the Aldana versus Bugmal game. So as I said, we were very disappointed in a result against you, but even from my point of view, I kind of told the team, like, listen, Lotulim's number one. Obviously not the best showing, but at the same time, you know, if you're going to lose to the number one team, you really got to bounce back and have a good result the next game. And we were able to do this, actually, ironically, completely inversing the score. So this time we won 4-1 instead of losing to 4-1. So goal scores for Aldana were AJ Pacheco with 1, Raymond Fernandez with 1, Kyle Fernandez with 1, and Ian D'Souza with 1. And goal scorer for Bugmal was Wilber De Cruz with 1. So this was a game where we pretty much dominated from start to finish. They were missing a few of their key players for sure. In fact, this is a game we remembered by missing a lot of chances. It was 2-1 for the longest time. And finally, in the last 10 minutes, the floodgates kind of opened up a little bit for us, just pressuring them and them getting a little more tired. But was definitely a game where we needed to improve our finishing and really convert more chances. From a Bugmalo point of view, they were missing some of their key guys in the middle, like Calvin, Elton, and Cameron. What advice would you have for a team like Bugmalo, which kind of features a mesh of youth and veteran players, but at the same time, it feels like if Elton's not there, Cameron's not there, you don't really know what they're going to do. You don't really know who their team is going to rally against. So what are they supposed to do when some key guys are missing? What's something they can improve on in that aspect?
Yeah, it's not easy to replace the talent of Elton and Cam. Those guys are both great players. So some of the young guys will have to step up, but that doesn't come easily. It's not like it'll take a couple of years and some practice and some more experience, and then they'll have to step up in these games and try to replace Elton and Cam, which is not easy to do.
Exactly, and I think experience is the only thing that they can rely on to really get that game knowledge, get that game experience, and get toughened by the league. But I just feel like they're kind of in a state where without those key guys in the middle, they really are lost out there. They don't have someone to rally around, and I think it makes it very, very difficult for them to get a positive result. From our point of view, just from an outsider's point of view, obviously I see our team from a certain perspective, playing on the team, things like that. I've actually never really asked you your advice. When you look at our team, what do you think we can improve on, and what should we be aiming to do from your perspective?
For me, with your team, like I mentioned earlier, like the physicality is not there anymore. Like earlier, like you guys were defensively extremely strong, and we'd be lucky to get one goal against you guys, and it would be 0-0 for the longest time. But this year, it seems like you guys are conceding a lot more, which puts pressure on you guys to score more goals, which you were never known for, even though you had some people that can pass the ball this time. So just, I think if you shore up your defense, you guys will be in a lot better position, and I think you'd have a better season overall.
Yeah, no, that's some great advice. We have traditionally been known as a team that, you keep it at 0-0, and then you get a goal later on. We play really well at a tied 0-0 level, or with the lead later on, but we struggle heavily playing from behind. Like I'm not sure if I can ever think of a really big result we've had when we've been down several goals and then come back to fight back to rally to have some crazy comeback. Like yeah, even this season we had 2-0 down to Marga and we tied 2-2, but still that was kind of a shock to us. So definitely I think we need to shore ourselves up a little bit more defensively, get back to our roots there, and then kind of add in a little bit more of the offensive flavor that we've tried to this year and past years for sure. Moving on to the last game, we have Margao versus Donna Paula. As listeners will remember, this is a game where just a week before, Margao had thrashed Donna Paula 11-0. It was just really embarrassing. I wanted Donna Paula to have a better showing. I mean, I guess you could argue they did. They lost 5-0 this time, so they've halved their loss, so I guess credit in that sense. But Margao had goal scorers Dwayne Lobo Perez with 1, Gregory D'Souza with 2, Jeremiah J.J. Pinto with 1, and Carlton Fernandez with 1. With Margao, the two names that keep coming up are Dwayne and Gregory. We did not have, unfortunately, a Margao player or coach reach out to us, gave us more information about Gregory D'Souza. So he still remains this anonymous, shadow-like guy that keeps popping up and scoring goals. I'll actually jump to a later date, which was this weekend, where Margao won 4-0. And you look at the score sheet, it's Dwayne Lobo Perez 3, Gregory D'Souza 1. This was over Bugmalo just this past weekend. So these two guys are racking up goals at a very, very impressive rate. Dwayne is up to 15 for the season now. They only have 2 games left. I don't think he's going to come near to Stephen Fernandez's record, so he can sleep easy tonight. But very, very impressive offensive potency from Margao. So Keegan, how are they doing this? What is the secret behind Margao's offense? Tell the listeners and tell me, because I'm trying to figure out how they're scoring so many goals on such a consistent basis.
Well, I haven't watched too many of their games, but just the way they play against us, they play a high tempo, so they're always pressing the ball, and against some other teams, they might win it a lot quicker, so they dominate possession. And the other thing I noticed is that they're a really fit team, so a lot of teams might be able to keep it close for, 50, maybe 60 minutes. But then in those last 15, 20 minutes, when teams start to tire out, they take advantage and they'll get a couple of goals to kind of stretch that score.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. They are incredibly in shape. I think it's also a combination of bringing that mops of youth, has added that energy. The downside of the youth is always they have a lot of energy but a lot of inexperience. But I think they've actually had a good blend where they've kept, like I'd say, about 80% of the team's core is still there with all the experience and chemistry. And the last 20% has been like a select few from Mopsa that made the cut. So I think that's kind of added to that fitness and that energy that you're speaking about, in the sense that they can really outlast you during the game, and kind of the train keeps going. It's not like they slow down the momentum in the second half. Like, they just keep pushing. Where I feel like they differ from you guys is, yes, you guys have constant pressure, but I feel like there's more talent on your team, in the sense that your pressure kind of comes in more of a possession base, quick passing, a lot of speed on the wings. Whereas with Margo, I find it's a little bit more brute force. I don't find there's much passing back and forth, one-touch football. I feel like it's more a little bit more physical, a little more direct, which works against teams, but not maybe against teams like you. What do you think?
Exactly. It's a little bit more long balls than they used to play in the past. Like, a couple of years ago, they had a really good ground game, like moving the ball through the midfield. But now it's a lot of balls over the top to, you know, Dwayne or maybe Gregory when both of them are playing up.
Yeah, exactly. So, contrasting styles, it does work against a lot of teams. It'll be interesting to see how it works in the playoffs. So I am very excited to see how Margo does this playoffs. I said right at the beginning of the season, I said this is the season they need to have where they make a deep run in the playoffs. I didn't say they have to win the championship, but I said in order to reassert themselves as one of the top teams in the league, they have to make the finals. I think they're heavy favorites at this point to make the finals with your guys being the opponent, but I'm very interested to see how their playoff run goes. Let's move on now to August 14th. We had another midweek game between yourselves and Donna Paula. Once again, unfortunately, not a great result for Donna Paula. You guys won 8-0 with a goal from Ron Montero. Always great to see his name there. Craig Raj with 4 more goals. Dane Don Millen with 1. Aaron Atwell with 1. And Kyle Machado again popping up with the goal. This is his return on goals now. It's almost like 2-1 every other game. He's turning into like Cristiano Ronaldo. I won't let him hear that though, or else it'll go to his head. 8-0 final score. What can you tell us about this game? Was it just kind of what the score says, just possession based dominance from start to finish?
Not exactly. One of the things with this game is with Donna Paula, they played a really high line. I mean, like really high, like at half line, literally. So initially we were not able to have possession because they were pressing us, and you know, the whole game was in our half. But the minute we kind of figured that out, then we just started putting some long balls over the top, and we have guys with quite a bit of pace. And then, you know, like they weren't able to adapt and change their tactics at that point, and we were up like 6-0 in like the first 25, 30 minutes. And then we kind of, you know, then we were able to just pass the ball around and kill time, so to speak.
Okay, so just to clarify here, they played a high line. They were pressing you in your half. You guys figured it out. And then they didn't adapt, but it was 6-0 after like 25 minutes. So for exactly how many minutes were they pressing you before you figured this out?
Maybe like 10 minutes.
10 minutes. So 10 minutes of solid pressure in your half before you figured it out and scored 6 goals unanswered.
Yeah, because like they didn't make any changes and they still kept pressing really high. And then all it took for us was to send, you know, instead of the strikers who were being caught offside initially, we just sent somebody from the midfield over like with the through ball over the top, and we were able to, you know, get a couple of chances. And then after that, they kind of got a bit dejected and, you know, weren't pressing as much. And then we were able to score quite freely.
Yeah, perfect. No, I know I'm kidding around. I'm just saying it's funny from my perspective that your team had to actually struggle for 10 minutes for once. Like, credit them for pressing you guys for 10 minutes and making you guys actually think, because I think most games you guys just kind of sleepwalk to a victory just based on the system you have and the talent you have. But it's kind of nice to know that they actually tried a different outlook and a different approach strategy-wise. For a lot of listeners, you know, they kind of rely on us to describe strategies or approaches to how to do things. From my point of view, so the defense, you know, you line up with your 4 defense, for example, and when people say they're playing a high line, what that means is the 4 defense form a line and they kind of go more towards the offensive net. What this does is it creates a bigger gap behind them, but it's more likely for the opposing force to be offside if they're standing behind them. So you're playing a high line, you're trying to force the other opponent offside, or they have to kind of follow that line and they're very far away from the net. So this is great against certain teams that have no speed and no pace, because you'll either catch them offside, or even if they do lob a ball over and everyone's onside, they won't be able to outrun you to get to the ball. Your defenders can chase them down, and it neutralizes that threat. So that's playing a high line. That's when you would do it. If you're playing, you know, the opposite style with a back four that's really sitting deep, what that means is there's a lot of the field in front of you. You can kind of see the whole game. No one's going to be lobbing balls over you. But what that means is the opposing forwards, the opposing team, they can really push closer to your net, which means that if they get a ground ball pass, if they get a through ball pass to their feet, they're much closer to your net than they would be if you played a high line. This is good to use against teams that have a lot of pace, because if you're playing high and they knock it over, that, you know, that winger, that forward on the opposing team that's going to sprint, outrun you, it's really, really hard to catch up. So you don't want to play a high line. Whereas the reverse, if you sit deep and you're playing against a team that has very talented midfielders, then you're giving them tons of space to work with. They can really stretch the field, and you run into problems that way. So I guess what I'm kind of describing here is the two methods of why you would play a high line versus a deep line. The issue is when it comes to playing your team. You know, if you play a high line, you have people like Craig Raj, who's incredibly fast on the wing, and he can out-sprint almost anyone in the league, so he's going to destroy you there. Or if you play a deep, you know, deep back four, you're going to result into dealing with people in the central mids like Neil Da Silva, Aaron Atwell, yourself, who are used to a possession-based game, passing around and want the space. So it's, once again, kind of pick your poison against you guys. Is that the way you see a high line and a deep line? Is there anything kind of strategy-wise you would add to that, or is that kind of the analysis you see it as well?
Yeah, that makes sense in terms of what you said. The thing I'd add is, like, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, hindsight's 20/20 that if they had a setback, that would have worked, because that might not have also worked because we have a good passing game. But I would just like to see some kind of, you know, mid-game adjustment when you can see that many so quickly. Like, someone needs to say, you know, this is not working, we need to change it up. And then if you try something else and that's not working, you know, that's okay, but at least you made the adjustment, as opposed to like sticking with the plan. And then even though it's going, when you're conceding like 6 goals in like the first half.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I completely agree with that. Okay, so moving on, we'll go to August 16th. We had Aguado versus Bugmalo. And finally, for the first time in this entire season, we can sound the upset alarm. Because we have a shocking result, Bugmalo winning 3-1 over Aguado. Bugmalo having goal scorers Wilber de Cruz with one, Naga Adrian Rayavarapu with one, and Conan Fernandez with one. And the goal scorer for Aguada was Andrew Fernandez with one. So I remember when I heard about this, when I saw this, I was shocked. I reached out to some GSL insiders who informed me that, you know, Aguada was missing a few players and Bugmalo had everyone. But to be honest, that doesn't really matter to me. Aguada, they really have so much talent, they can afford to miss some people. And Bugmalo, even with their entire full lineup, I still feel like that would be an uphill battle. So amazing result from Bugmalo here, 3-1. What are your thoughts on this match, Keegan?
Yeah, I think it's a great result for Bugmalo. And, you know, like, all the teams have people missing throughout our season. Like, no team has their full roster for every game. So that should never be an excuse for anyone. But getting 3 goals against Aguada is fantastic for Bugmalo. And it's 3 points that they needed. And I think because of that game, they're actually above Kolva in the standings right now.
Exactly. So there's two kind of subplots. Actually, there's 3 subplots going on right now in the standings. We'll know more when we do our playoff preview after the regular season ends. But kind of the way things are shaping up because of this actual specific result, Bugmalo beating Aguada, it means that right now at the top, we have yourselves and Margao. You guys are pretty close, you know, 4 points-ish away from each other. So the game on August 26th, between the two of you, is just plans to be an amazing, amazing game. Really looking forward to that one and seeing the result of that. Then we have kind of this second, third, fourth, fifth kind of place. Second, third, fourth race between Margao, if they don't catch up to you, Aguada behind them, and us behind Aguada. So us three kind of jockeying for that second, third, or fourth position. And we play Aguada actually next Sunday. So huge implications in that match as well. And in my mind, I still think you guys will finish first. So I think between the three of us, the goal should be not to finish fourth. You don't want to drop, obviously, fifth or below, but I think if you finish second or third, it means if you win your first game, you'll play the other team and you don't have to play you guys in the finals, which I think is much better. Whereas if you finish fourth, you'll have to play you guys if you win in, and we win in the semis. So the way it's looking in the table right now, it seems like unless everything breaks right, it's going to be kind of yourselves, Marga, Aguada, us. But a lot's going to depend on us playing Aguada this Sunday. So a lot on the line there. So credit to Bugmalo for a big win, a shocking upset. And from your point of view, if you guys finish first, I know you guys are focused right now on winning the league. If you win the league, do you care who you play in the – you'll have a bye for the quarterfinals, but do you really care who you play in the semis and finals, or is it really just whoever comes, comes?
No, yeah, like at that point, it doesn't matter. You got to beat everyone to win the title, right? So we won't really focus too much on that. But for you guys, yeah, because that's a big game against Aguada, because they got I think you guys have Colva and then you have Aguada. But Aguada's got Marga after that too, so they have two like really tough games.
Exactly. So I remember I was looking at this in preparation for this podcast, and for us, we really have to beat Colva on Friday, but they won't really want to win that game too. And then us against Aguada becomes massive. And then if we do manage to, if everything goes great, then Aguada has to play Margo, which is massive for both of them after Margo just played you. So really, really exciting end to the season. It's kind of what we want to see in the final stages. There's a lot on the line and teams highly motivated to win. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens. But I agree with you. It's I think the second, third, fourth place is going to be a huge, huge shakeup. I personally would like to see us play a quarterfinal game, and if we manage to win that, play Margao, because the two games we've had so far against Margao have been absolute blockbusters, and also that would mean there'd be a new person in the finals. I know I love you, I know I love your team, I love you guys playing stuff, but I'm really tired of seeing you guys and Aguada in the finals. Like, I would love for there to be someone else there, just from a optics point of view and a casting point of view.
Yeah.
This is kind of becoming like the Cavaliers versus Warriors. Like, yeah, we know you guys are the best, but we really don't play all the time. It's getting kind of boring.
Yeah, I think for the league, that'll be good too, because Margo's pretty much got second place locked up. But if you guys can leapfrog Aguada, which is very possible because you guys are playing them and Colva, that'll definitely change things up for the playoffs. And then, you know, we would probably play Aguada in the semifinals if that's where the results shook out.
Exactly. So anyways, we're jumping way ahead of ourselves, and we're not trying to disrespect the people 5th, 6th, 7th. It's more just a hypothetical exercise, just trying to project the future. This is what all the teams are doing. I'm sure the Colva, Bugmalo, Donna Paul are all kind of looking up to see who they would rather play as well. So it's not like they're not doing the same thing. So getting back to the games we were talking about, we'll have to move on to this Sunday's games. We already talked about Margo versus Bugmalo. We'll jump right into Aldana versus Donna Paula. This is a game that, you know, we were really struggling to field a full team. We had just enough players in the end, which was great. And Donna Paula had quite a hefty bench, but it was weird. They don't seem to use the full extent of their bench for the entire game. They seem to have kind of a starting lineup and a few people that sub in, but they weren't using everyone on their roster. I was a little bit confused by that. I thought they'd want to have, you know, fresh legs out there, but maybe they are trying to establish more of a starting 11 or get people more familiar with each other. The final score was Aldana 4, Donna Paula 0. Goal scorers for Aldana were Ethan Fernandez, myself with 2, and Fabio Paim with 1. So this was actually a game that early on we scored our first goal. Ethan Fernandez on the right side, a beautiful through ball to him, and a right-sided finish to the bottom left of the net. And then about 10-20 minutes later, AJ Pacheco with a great run down the middle. I cut into the middle, pass it across to me, beat the defender, and put it bottom left as well. Well, so we're up 2-0. We're feeling really confident at this point, and we went into halftime. However, as you know, 2-0, extremely dangerous score. And the last 10 minutes of the second half, the fatigue was starting to show with us. They were starting to come on a little bit more, and we were getting tired with no subs, and just it was a hot day, and their energy levels were very high because they were still in the game at that point. So I was very happy to hear the halftime whistle at 2-0. You really want to go in with that lead and kind of get a reset. So in the second half, it was more of a dominating story from our point of view. They didn't really have any clear-cut chances to talk about. And about 10 minutes in the second half, Fabio with a great shot from distance, went off the goalie's, kind of swerved in the midair, went off the goalie's hand and in. And then in the 94th minute, AJ Pacheco with a breakaway run, taken down by their central defender, and a penalty shot awarded, which I took and scored. So, one of the funny things I wanted to comment about this game was, you know, Donna Paul is a team that we we talk about a lot. We haven't really got a lot of their perspective because they haven't unfortunately emailed in or messaged in or things like that. I've always wanted them to participate and get a player on. But you can tell they actually really listen to the podcast because during the game, not only are they mentioning the podcast all the time, but actually in the 94th minute, we got a penalty shot. And I was lining up to take it. And, you know, the trash talking just starts right away, which is whatever, normal. I don't know about you. I'll ask your opinion after. But when it comes to penalty shot and I line up and people are trash talking, I actually find it motivating because I listen and I'm like, okay, that guy said that. So if I score, I can make fun of him in this way. This guy said that, so I want to prove him wrong. You know, I'm kind of like making a mental list of all the people that are trash talking, how I can trash talk back. How about you? Do you just tune them all out? Do you listen and laugh? Do you not even care? When you're taking a penalty shot, what's your mentality going in?
Yeah, I'm just trying to tune everything out. Like, obviously, you hear what people say, but I'm just trying to focus on the shot that I'm taking and where I want to place the ball. I'm not really focusing on the trash talking aspect of it while I'm, you know, taking the shot.
Exactly. And I think if it was, you know, a more, how should I put this? If it was a more important penalty shot, if it was a tie game or 0-0 or a more crucial part in the match, I think I would maybe tune it up more, not care. But because it was 3-0 in the 94th minute and I know the ref's about to call the game right after, there's zero pressure on this penalty shot. You can do whatever you want. And actually, the goalie stayed center. So I think he thought I was going to try and chip him just to be all fancy. But I was actually laughing so hard at the trash talking because all their players were saying insults that were all podcast related. So one guy was like, oh, if you miss, you'll make fun of yourself on the podcast. Another guy was like, oh, he's going to score so he can talk about himself on the podcast. And everyone just saying podcast stuff. So I was actually really laughing. I thought it was really funny. But the highlight by far, like this is the best moment of the season in my mind by far, is after I scored, one of the Donna Paula players, I believe his name is Dwayne, plays center defensive midfielder, started yelling out in a chant, MVP. MVP, MVP. And I couldn't get over it. I was like, man, not only does this guy listen to the podcast, he knows the drop that I'm about to play. And he's like taking this lighthearted enough just to like say the chant, and it's pretty funny. So shout out to them for taking it in stride and having some fun trash talk at the end. But from a game perspective, this was overall pretty comfortable for us. It saw the return of the legend of the league, Roland Mascarenhas, who did sign for us on a 10-day trial. He flew in from India on Tuesday, passed a medical on Friday, and was cleared to play. So addition to our team for the next couple of games, which is going to help out a lot to have some extra bodies because, honestly, we're really short. We have 20 players and I think 8 injuries. So you do the math. It's not a great turnout that we can have for these games.
I have a question about one of your other goal scorers, Fabio. Was he a recent signing? Somebody picked him up from Brazil? Can you shed some light on that signing and how it came about?
Yeah, exactly. So actually, Donna Paul was asking about our player as well. So basically, Fabio, he's around just under 40 years old. But his kid actually goes to the same school as Rowan, who's our coach and longtime player, legend of the league as well, Rowan Narona. And they were getting talking. He actually is from Brazil. They moved about 6 months ago for his job, not his wife's job. And they were talking, he loves soccer, he's played soccer before, and his wife is actually going. So he's not going at all, he's Brazilian, but he's married to a Goan, luckily for us, and he was looking for a team and we needed a body. So we brought him in. This is actually the first time I've played with him. He's only played 2 games, I think. So he's a welcome addition to our team and we're hoping to have him join us and keep playing with us going forward.
Excellent.
So moving on to the last game for us to talk about, we have Lotlum versus Kolva. This is a game I thought was going to be a little bit closer just because Kolva was there pretty early. They were prepping. I think they saw this as another chance for them to claim a big scalp. And I mean, I'm sure you know this, but everyone wants to be that team that beats you guys for the first time because it's been so long. So everyone wants to be that team. It's kind of extra motivation. When I was watching the game, like 10... not even 10 minutes, I think 3 minutes into the game, there was like a kerfuffle around the box leading to a Bradley Fernandez header towards the goalie. It hit some people and like rolled in. Terrible goal, like one of the worst goals I've ever seen. But like, it was like 3 minutes into the game and very disappointing right off the bat. And at that point, I was like, this game's over. Like, there's no way this is going to be as close as I thought it was. Final score was Lotlum 5, Kolva 0, with Craig Raj scoring 3, another hat trick for him. Bradley Fernandez with 1 and Aaron Atwell with 1. So give us a loaded on this game. What happened and how did it go for you guys?
Yeah, again, with this game, the scoreline doesn't reflect what the game really was, because, like you said, we got a somewhat lucky goal in like the felt like the first minute, but even after that, like, we weren't able to pass the ball like we normally do, and we just didn't have our A game, and the score was 1-0, you know, well after halftime, maybe like the 50th, 60th minute, it was still 1-0, and then we got a second goal from a corner, which Aaron scored. And then we were able to kind of, you know, their shoulders kind of dropped a little bit, and, you know, they didn't think a comeback was possible. And then we got like three more towards the end when they kind of tired out. But they actually played quite well defensively, at least. Didn't really secure too much going forward because it was just Johnny in the middle and his brother up top. There wasn't anyone else that was threatening, you know, our goal too much. But they have some young players that are really talented. If they just had some people that could guide them and, you know, tell them what they're doing well and what they need to work on, you know, they could really do well in the future.
Yeah, exactly. Kolva is just a mystery to me. I can't tell which direction they're going. I think the playoffs is actually going to be very interesting for them because they're a dark horse in the playoffs. I don't think people should underestimate them. They're most likely going to finish in that fifth seed. I think it's going to be close between them and Bugmalo. They're also playing each other on August 26th, which is another amazing game to watch because that could really determine who finishes where. But my gut tells me they're going to finish in the fifth spot, which means they'll play either Aguada or ourselves. And I think against both teams, that would be a great game. They probably prefer playing us versus having to play Aguada. I think they'd like to play us as they consider us a closer team to them and would be a closer game. But I think that they're a team to watch out for. The other thing I've noticed with them is the Vandreens haven't been as phenomenal and as game-changing as they used to be with Johnny and Noah. They're really game-changing talents that can turn the tide of a game. And in the center midfield, just completely dominate and just make some amazing passes and plays, especially Johnny Vandreen. But I haven't seen that this year. I haven't felt that same energy and that same talent coming through. I don't know if this is something that you've noticed as well.
Yeah, I think initially he was injured for a little bit and he missed a couple of games. But even in our game last week, like he had a couple of moments where he did some great things but didn't really have the support around him to, you know, finish those chances or to play the ball back to him where he wanted. So that's something that they need to work on and, you know, get him the ball more in attacking areas.
Yeah, exactly. I think they kind of need to build their system around him because he's someone that's a super talent, can definitely carry them through, and is kind of an X factor going to the playoffs. So I'm actually really, really excited for the playoffs this year. I think that there's going to be a lot of close games. Last year, I found the early rounds of the playoffs, actually the playoffs in general last year, weren't the greatest. So I'm hoping for closer ties this year. That rounds out all the match recaps. For once, we're actually going to look forward to some predictions here because, as we said, we do have a really tightly contested race. So we've kind of talked in detail about where people are shaping up, assuming you guys finish in first and Margot finishes second. What is your gut feeling about Aguada and Aldana when it comes to third and fourth place, just looking at the remaining matches and how you see the teams?
Well, that's going to be the toughest result to call because, like, your game against them is going to be huge. I would give you guys the edge just because your last game is against I think you guys are playing Kolva, right, after that. And because they have to play Margao in the game after that, it will be really difficult for them. So
we
just
actually play Kolva before. So we play Kolva, then them, and then they play us, then Margao. So we have a bye week the last week, which kind of is unfortunate because we won't be able to impact anything on the last weekend. However, if we beat both Kolva and Aguada, we can kind of take it out of their hands.
Yeah, so because with the way Aguada's season, the way their season's been going, I don't know if they'll beat Margao. So And you guys should beat Kolva, the way their season's been going. So it's going to come down to the game, you know, you guys against Aguada, and that's going to be a good one.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that makes sense. And then between Bugmalo and Kolva for the fifth and sixth spots, how do you see that faring?
I'd have to give the edge to Kolva. Even though Bugmalo's ahead on points, Kolva's got a game in hand. And then Kolva plays both Bugmalo and Donapala in addition to you guys. And they should definitely be able to get, you know, at least 4 to 6 points out of those games.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, not only the game in hand, but Bugmalo's last game against you guys on the final day of the season. And let's say you guys did have a slip up against Margaret, that might be a game that you guys kind of need to lock down just to lock up number one and going to the playoffs on a high. So I do think Kolva has the easier remaining schedule, so they should tie up that place, no problem. But very interesting final games to go through. Thanks again, Keegan, so much for a great match recap. I hope everyone enjoyed the episode. Once again, we won't be back for a couple weeks until after the regular season is over on September 9th. We mentioned some great games to look forward to, especially September 26th. Highly, highly recommend you guys come out and watch some of those games. We have actually, all three games are phenomenal. We have Lothlin Margaux fighting for first place. We have Aguada Aldana fighting for third and fourth. And we have Bugmalo Kolva fighting for fifth and sixth. So all three games on the same day. You can all watch them at Centennial Park on Sunday, August 26th. Hope to see you guys there. Keegan, thanks so much. And make sure you turn in next week for a brand new episode.